Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And we are here to talk about the last week or so of the Mets playing baseball games, which hasn't been as much as as many games as we had hoped or thought there'd be. The Mets were a victim of two rainouts last weekend at Citi Field. And it's a good thing that they're away this weekend, because last night would have probably been a rainout and today might have been a rainout for them. But they are on the West Coast now. They had three games against the Diamondbacks, which they won 2 of 3. And they lost last night's first contest against the Padres. So, because there is limited stuff to talk about, I feel like we should probably focus our conversation on a few key things. And we should talk about something that makes us angry first, so that we can end on a positive note. But the Mets optioned Sean Reed Foley down to Syracuse earlier this week. And I think both of us were rightly annoyed by that move. You've written about why Reed Foley has been so effective for the Mets this season. And while I understand that he is sort of a man without a role in that bullpen, he's also been one of the most effective members of that bullpen. And so I guess the way I want to start this conversation is, who would you have optioned or DFA'd, if the case may be, instead of Reed Foley?
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good question, I think, and it's a fair one. I guess Drew Smith would be the odd man out. You know, I wrote about Gazelman, and that's up on the site today. You know, this morning, and what he's been doing. It's been very nice to see this many relievers being effective. You know, it's a bit of a tough call. I don't think they were going to option Gazelman, given that he has a longer track record with the team, a longer track record of major league experience, not necessarily always successful. But I think in particular, because they are in this mode that they need multiple inning relievers almost every night, you know, when DeGrom pitches, when Stroman pitches, and when Walker pitches, you know, on average, you're getting much more out of them. But David Peterson's a complete wild card who can go anywhere from one out, like he did the other night, in a game the Mets still managed to win, which is great. to occasionally six or seven innings. I've always just been annoyed by that kind of volatility in a rotation, you know, in a spot in the rotation.
Yes.
But all of that said, you know, it's a nice problem to have to say, okay, everybody in the bullpen right now has been doing a reasonably good job. You know, Drew Smith hasn't been bad by any means, but I think just if I had to choose between those two, I think I would option Smith back to Syracuse and keep Reed Foley, particularly since the Mets are going into tonight with Lucchese as the starter.
Yes.
We know they'll need multiple innings. Gazelman threw 3 2/3 in his appearance the other day. So I'd be shocked if he was available yet. You know, so you just, you look at that stuff and it's nice that they have multiple guys. It's fantastic that Seth Lugo is back. But with Reed Foley doing what he's done, I just didn't like the timing of it, knowing that they don't have anywhere near five guaranteed starting pitchers who are all likely to go five or more innings now or anytime in the near future. I guess the one upside to doing it is that there are two off days within the 10-day waiting period before they can bring him back, before and after the Orioles series next week. But a four-game series against a good team in the Padres, and knowing that you're going into it with at least one game that Lucchese might not give you much, even if he's good, he might go three or four innings and get the hook. I just would have rather had him around. So no offense to Drew Smith. I think there's some intriguing stuff there with him, but that would have been my choice. You know, they could also shorten the bench, but no off days from the start of the, you know, or this whole stretch, really, other than the weather postponements they had. But since Monday night, you know, it's all games that are either impossible in Arizona to get rained out,
right, or
99.9% unlikely to get rained out in San Diego. So, yeah, this is a Sean Reed Foley podcast. And
well, so I think that you bring up a really good point here, which is that, you know, Reed Foley has options remaining, whereas Jacob Barnes, for instance, is not. And while I think that Reed Foley is the better pitcher for Jacob Barnes than Jacob Barnes, I understand why you don't want to have to designate Barnes for assignment and possibly lose him to another team, whereas Reed Foley can come up and down without consequence this season. That's why I think that someone like Drew Smith is the right guy to go down, because Smith also has options. And also, you know, Smith has looked good so far in his major league appearances, but has not looked, you know, fantastic. He hasn't looked like, let's say, like Castro has looked, right? Where you look at Castro and you say, like, all right, we need to have this guy up and available all the time because he is one of our most important and impressive pitchers right now. I understand why you're not going to send that guy down if there's even options remaining for him. But, you know, Smith is a guy, he's still working on some stuff. I would have optioned Smith as well. I guess my question is, like, is this going to be Reed Foley's fate for the rest of the season? Is he going to be the guy who just gets shuttled around because of his options and because of his rubber arm, that he can be useful to both Syracuse and to the Mets without really jeopardizing a roster spot?
Yeah. I think I don't know how long of a leash they have in mind for Barnes. So that I think is the answer to that question ultimately. And they do have Tommy Hunter on the injured list. They do have Betances on the injured list. Those are guys who could come back. The other thing as the season plays out, too, is that Lucchese has options. So if Barnes is pitching well, if Smith is pitching well, and Gazelman's pitching well, and all of that's happening, and Lucchese is a little shaky, not that Reed Foley is necessarily going to get that role, but he is a guy who has options. So there's some flexibility there. I don't see it with Barnes. You know, the ERA is still high. I know that can be fluky for relievers. I know it's not that many innings. But with the way health and injuries have gone for them this year, I totally get not wanting to lose a pitcher.
Right.
But if things start to get a little more crowded, you know, if Gesellman keeps it up, great. Or, you know, you could, with Gesellman still having options, and it'd be interesting to see if they do this, because having options and then also versus having options and being a guy who's been on the major league team for a few years, I feel like is a very different thing.
100%. I was just going to say that, actually.
So they could make Gesellman and Reed Foley into one roster spot and just rotate them out. All right, Gesellman, 1, 2, 3 long outings in a row. Reed Foley's up the next day. 1, 2, 3 long outings. Swap them back. I'd be surprised if they did it, but they could do it that way. But if Barnes is still rocking a 5+ ERA by like July 1st or the All-Star break, not that that's that different, but if he's still in that spot at that time, I'd say let's just have Reed Foley and Gesellman on the roster in the bullpen. And then if you need a spot for an injured guy coming back, option Drew Smith back too. So,
right.
The bullpen was my biggest concern, and the fact that we're sitting here on June 4th and we're looking at it like, well, there's one bad reliever. It's hard to pick a guy to send to the minors. That is a luxury I did not think we would have. So far, I am very happy to have my concerns about this bullpen look silly.
No, I mean, I also don't think our concerns were coming from a place of like, boo Mets, they never have good relievers. It was like, you know, we didn't expect Robert Gesellman to pitch to the highest level of his career with, as you point out in your article today, very little change to what he's throwing. Like, his stuff isn't breaking differently, his velocity isn't really changed, he's just having better results right now. I don't think we were crazy in thinking that Betances was maybe washed, because it looks like he's probably washed, you know.
Right.
It's not crazy for us to think, well, you know, Familia hasn't been himself for a couple of years, but now he's looking like himself again. I think that, you know, and then even Reed Foley, like, I remember when the Mets trade went down, I think it was Lucas, it was somebody on our minors team, said, like, that Reed Foley was the least intriguing of the guys because he was the most known commodity. And I agreed with that, because you look at Reed Foley's numbers before he came to the Mets, and they weren't all that impressive. But he's turned in a phenomenal year so far for the Mets. Like, this wasn't us being like, well, Diaz is a tightrope walk, so he's going to suck this year.
Right.
It wasn't us being downers. It was, I think we were being realistic about the bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Diaz and May, and look, I think May's going to be fine. I know he's had a little rough stretch lately, but Diaz and May were expected to be good. And combined overall, they've put up good work.
Yes.
There's those two spots. And, Aaron Loop has been very good and gotten into some spots where, you know, especially with the rule, the three batter minimum rule, he can't just face lefties, and he's been effective. So far, it's sort of like, all right, you know, they didn't strike on Barnes being a dominant reliever like they thought they could maybe transform him into, at least not yet. But you're looking at, I don't know, best case or one notch down from best case scenario with every other reliever in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So
I think that's very well said. I'm going to be very, I mean, look, there's obviously going to be injuries that will happen throughout the year. And I think that eventually the patience with Lucchese might run out and he might get optioned. Given the success they've had, I wouldn't be opposed to either Sean Reed Foley or Robert Gesellman getting a couple of turns in the rotation. How would you feel about that as opposed to Lucchese?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's as long as it's sort of the same concept as Lucchese, you know, basically a multiple inning opener instead of a quote-unquote starting pitcher.
Right.
You know, I like the mix and match. You know, I think it's been nice that they've actually used an opener. Not that I ever had like strong feelings about openers in baseball, but I don't know. It's just nice to say, okay, look, they're trying out some things, and overall they've worked too. You know, I know they're not doing the opener thing tonight with Lucchese. I would have considered it to get somebody else a shot at Tatis the first time up.
Mm-hmm.
And then get Lucchese through the order maybe 1 to 1.5 times after that. But, you know, it's been nice to have a little bit of that flexibility. And just it's sort of born out of necessity. If Carrasco was back for 2 or 3 weeks already, and Syndergaard were looking at coming back in another week or two, we might be in a very different spot where who cares about openers? There's
right.
there's five very good starting pitchers. Those other guys can, you know, can eat up the rest of the innings. We might even be saying like, hey, let's shift that balance a little and get another guy on the bench. You know, maybe we don't need the Mets to have this many bullpen arms, but we're not in that reality. And obviously they do need them.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm all about trying out guys in different roles and just also, I think that helps loosen things up a little bit. Like, okay, yeah, you're DeGrom. We're catering to you. You are starting and you are staying in the game until it's obvious, you know, that it's time to go to the bullpen. Everybody else, I think a little bit of flexibility is good.
Yeah, I completely agree. Completely agree with that. So let's talk. I mentioned injuries before. You know, in regards to there being an open spot on the at some point in the bullpen because of injuries, because that's just what teams do. But the Mets have had a little bit of injury news since we last spoke. Pete Alonso came off of the injured list and has been good so far. His first night back, he had a home run and a two-run single, and it's nice to see Pete back. He did not play last night, which the official reason was that he was just being rested, that they're sort of easing him back in. I hope that's the case.
He did pinch hit, yes.
But I'm hoping that's not the Mets just, you know, covering for themselves as they've done so many times in the past.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess while things are going relatively well, they're in first place, still playing well. You know, it's not like they're in first place and they've lost 7 in a row, but the rest of the division has lost 10.
Right, yeah.
You know, all that, I don't want to say I believe every update they give. Obviously, the J.D. Davis injury situation has been murky information at best. But with Alonso, it's logical enough that I'm not going to jump to a conclusion until, you know, if the lineup comes out tonight and he's not in it. Okay, then.
Right.
Then it wasn't just a day off. But we'll know that soon enough.
Sure, yes.
I guess that's sort of like the beauty of a baseball season. Like, whatever strong opinions we have, it's not going to take long for us to find the answers.
Right, exactly. I mean, most times we record this show and within an hour it's out of date for some reason or another. So, you know, we're used to that.
So the Mets are trading for Ketel Marte this morning is what you're saying?
Oh, God, let's hope so.
I do think, I don't want to go on a whole tangent, but I do think it would be wise of them if they can get somebody who's a good player, a good position player. I think it would be wise to get them. And then if by some miracle everybody's healthy at any point, then okay, great. Figure that out later. But like
right.
Travis Blankenhorn's on the roster. If there's somebody out there they can get, go get them. And, you know, we'll figure out who plays what position in August.
Yes. We'll talk about Travis a little bit later in the show. But yeah, I completely agree with you. I think now is the time to make a big move. Before other teams are desperate, the Mets can make a move right now. But that's a conversation for maybe another day. Maybe next week we'll dig into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Back on the injury front, we lost Jonathan Villar to a hamstring injury. Has he been put on the IL yet? I don't believe so, right?
Yeah, not yet.
So we don't know if that's going to be an IL move, but I mean, it's going to be an IL move, right? When was a hamstring injury not on? I guess Tatis actually this week had a sore hamstring, right?
No, he had an oblique. He was oblique, which is even more like he's playing.
Right, yeah. So that's the surprising one, right? But it seems like VR is probably going to go on the IL for this. Not that I'm hoping for that at all. I hope he manages to make it out of that because I like watching VR play. And so I want to see him obviously continue. But are you... I mean, I don't think we should be surprised by this. VR is somebody who has been playing a whole lot. He's been running a lot. He's been... I mean, not that everyone who plays gets hurt, but it just seems to me like this was a guy who maybe wasn't expected to play this much and has now played a whole lot. Are you worried about his injury, or do you think this is just more of the same for the Mets?
Both.
Fair. Very fair answer, sir.
Yeah, no, I'd be shocked if he doesn't end up on the injured list. And it sucks because, like, one of the fun things that you've, spearheaded via Maggie's idea on Twitter, but the ER of the day is a nice little thing that we get to do. And although it's not exactly the same, I do like that Guillaume is a guy who could be back soon and has the double L in his name.
Yes, that is true. He could definitely fit into the double L club.
We could change it to like the LL of the day, and then every reference has to be an LL Cool J song. I don't know. Just an idea.
I mean, when they make their next West Coast road trip, going back to Cali is like a perfect headline for that then.
Yeah.
So something to think about. Something to think about here. But yeah, and speaking of Guillaume, you know, he is making some rehab starts now, finally, after an April 30th oblique strain. We actually have a piece going up, I believe, today, correct, about Guillaume?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
By the time you're hearing this,
it's on the site.
It'll be up. there's a... it's an interesting piece by our Michael Drago about whether... sort of what an extended Guillaume's season could look like, you know, in terms of him playing at least for a month or so every day. And I don't know if we're going to get that because there are just so many moving pieces on the Mets right now. I don't know if we're going to get a month of Guillaume at third base, but I mean, I'm glad to have him back. He's a tough out, as we know. He is a really good defender. He seems like somebody who can come off the bench with relative ease. He's a valuable guy to have on the team. And, you know, there are people on the roster who, again, we will talk about in a few minutes, who probably don't deserve a spot on the Major League roster right now. And so Guillaume coming back is a very good thing. Do you have a sense of who would be lost on the roster for Guillaume, who would be sent down or released?
Well, Blankenhorn... Yeah, Blankenhorn has options.
Right, so I think he's the one.
Yeah. Just looking to see real quick if there's anybody else who... I mean, like, Brandon Drury, I don't know. I guess Blankenhorn's got to show you something. Brandon Drury is who he is. I guess I'd keep him over Blankenhorn, but either one could go for Guillaume, and that would be fine. They both have options, so I don't know. I do know my cousin, the Twins fan, said Blankenhorn, who I think only played maybe once or twice in the field for the Twins, made such a bad error that was like, when I said, oh, he's a Met now, he's like, well, you guys, you do have the DH, right? Because as an American League fan, he is an obnoxious DH advocate, as many American League fans are. But that was his reaction. And then he sent me the play where it was just a routine ground ball. And look, it's just one play, but routine ground ball hit right at him. And I can't count the number of times he botched that one ball. Like, it was just like just mind-bogglingly bad defense. I don't know if that's who he is. You know, we've barely seen him. And again, this, even though Drury isn't a longtime Met, this probably comes back to the guy with more major league experience doesn't get optioned and the guy with less does. So
right.
That's my guess. But it would be a lot of fun to see Guillorme get everyday time and then knock Peraza to the bench. And Peraza's, you know, he's not tearing the cover off the ball or anything, but he's been a solid replacement level player.
I mean, Peraza might be playing second base in this scenario.
Well, he could. I guess it depends on how they want to roll with it. I just love the idea of Guillorme and Lindor.
Yes.
In the middle infield doing what they do. But it's possible that Guillorme gets stuck at third and, you know, he's capable over there, but he's similar to VR in that sense that they both just look a little less comfortable there.
Agreed.
As guys who have spent so much time as middle infielders, you know, it's not that different. I think sometimes, you know, in baseball where, you know, as fans or even front offices a little hesitant to, you know, have a guy switch positions and see how that goes. But like James McCann played first base and every once in a while, doesn't always work out, but like every once in a while, it's like, oh yeah, this guy's a professional baseball player. Like, it's not right. That shocking that somebody could hack it at a position that they don't play every day.
Right. Yes, I agree with that. We should also mention that James McCann is kind of hitting now. And, you know,
yeah.
I'm not willing to say we were wrong to doubt James McCann. I'm not anywhere near that yet. But it's nice to see him hitting a little bit. And it seemed like maybe playing first actually helped him out in some way, whether it was just a change of scenery or it was not having to worry about the mental pieces of preparing. I know that I think it was Ron on the broadcast who said, you know, sometimes a catcher has so much on his mind in terms of game preparation and all of that, that thinking about your offense can kind of fall to the wayside because you're too busy thinking about other things. And so maybe playing first base just opened him up a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, and you look, he's up to a 91 WRC plus. That's not something I would have predicted would be true
right.
on this date. You know, up until what? He started hitting about a week ago-ish. So,
yes.
Up until May 23rd, the end of the baseball week on that Sunday, he had a 52 WRC plus. Over a decent amount of plate appearances, you know?
Yeah.
So to go from an arbitrary endpoints, you can always, you know, manipulate things and make things look the way they are. But just from last Monday till now, hitting 344, 382, 813 with four home runs. Like after advising others in my fantasy baseball world, like, he's toast, you weren't wrong to drop him. I don't know why I haven't picked him up yet myself.
Yeah, that's a thing. It's a thing that happened. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's, this is the baseball season, right? This is what happens throughout. We're going to look stupid at various times, and we're going to look brilliant at various times for things we said. But I'm hoping that this means McCann is coming around for a sustained period of time. And if so, I would still give more playing time to Tomas Nito than we had initially anticipated. I'm not saying it's going to be necessarily a straight platoon or something of the like, but I think if McCann is starting four games a week and Nito three, I'd be okay with that. Or at very minimum, Nito starting two games a week.
Yeah. 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 No, And look, Nito's had his big hits. I think it's hilarious in like a good way that the Mets, with all-star voting starting, put out a graphic like mob the vote, and their all-star vote like graphic is the bench mob.
Right.
If Lindor keeps hitting the way he's been hitting for like the last week to 9 days ish, he'll end up having a pretty good shot of being on that team because of his reputation. Tatis is going to be voted the all-star shortstop probably every year, no matter how good Lindor is.
Right.
So there's, that's just one of those situations. Like Jeff Bagwell, when Mark McGwire was there, it was just like Bagwell was probably the better overall player in a lot of ways. Great defense, base running, all that kind of stuff. But you had the guy who was just the guy. So you weren't winning that starting all-star job gig.
Right.
Ever. So, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, yes, embrace the bench mob. I love that.
Yes. Absolutely. So, but yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what the Mets do with the catching situation if this seems to be for real with McCann.
Yeah.
So you wanted to pose a question to me about last night's game. Well, why don't we do that now?
Yes. Yeah. So very rarely would this thought even come to mind, and I was asleep for it. So this is very much just looking at the play log and going like, huh.
Same.
But the Mets get, they're down a run. They got first and second, nobody out, top of the ninth inning. And Travis Blankenhorn is up at the plate, and he grounds into a force out. It was just one out. But would you, as the manager of the Mets, Luis Rojas got ejected, and they flew you out to San Diego to manage the ninth inning. Would you have had him lay down a sacrifice bunt with Kevin Pillar and Francisco Lindor do up after him?
So my one caveat to this is going to be I have no idea how he bunts. Like, I don't know if I'm sure there is data out there either from the majors or the minors for how effective of a bunter Blankenhorn is. So without knowing that, let's just presume that he's perfectly league average in his bunting ability. Who was on second? Who was on first?
As the question asker, I should have had that handy.
Sorry.
No, it was, was it Nito and Peraza? Hold on. I have it all here. Yeah, it was. It was Nito and Peraza. Look at that. I remembered. Okay. Yeah, Nito singles, Peraza walks. We got first and second, nobody out. A guy with four major league plate appearances coming up to the plate. Pillar on deck and Lindor in the hole.
Was there anybody on the bench still for the Mets? Do you know that? I'm asking you way too many questions.
No, that's okay.
I'm trying to realistically assess the situation.
Right. They had already used Alonso and Nito and Blankenhorn. So I think Drury started. And VR is
VR's in
injury limbo. So yeah, Blankenhorn was the last pinch hitter they had. He the last position player they had.
Right.
There was nobody else beyond him after they used Nito to pinch hit.
Right.
Before him.
And this was the top of the ninth inning?
Yes.
See, part of me said, you let VR bunt and then just walk to first base. But you have to field the team in the bottom of the ninth if you go ahead. So you can't do that. A part of me also says you bring in like DeGrom to bunt, but again, you need to field the team, so you can't do that. I think I bunt with him here, and I am usually a never bunter or at least a seldom bunter guy. I just feel like when you have Pillar on deck and you have Lindor in the hole, so let's say the bunt gets down effectively and you have second and third with one out, you're down by a run. I think one of those two guys coming up has the bat control to at very least tie the game for you with a sacrifice fly. That is far more likely than... Yeah, I mean, did he advance the runners with the force out or no?
No, it was just a step on third situation.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of a reason why I wouldn't bunt, and I can't find one. I guess it's different, too, like, if this is 2022 Ronnie Mauricio, where he has four plate appearances because he was just called up, but he's one of your top prospects, and you're confident in his bat. I think that's a very different situation. But this is a guy who, if this guy could hit to the level I just don't feel confident enough with him. I keep running this over my head. I would definitely have bunted with him.
Nice. Yeah, no, I'm with you on the 99% never bunt. But I think it would have been the right call as somebody who was not even awake for it.
Same.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what is your music pick for the week?
So this is one that I don't think anybody would be surprised to hear from either of us. Lou Barlow, most famously of Dinosaur Jr., also his own solo career, also in Sebado. If I'm missing any other credits, I apologize.
The Folk Implosion had a hit in the 90s.
All right. early on in the pandemic, his Instagram live sets during the workday were, I don't know, I just gravitated to them. They just hit right. And it's weird. Like Jeff Tweedy, Wilco, I've loved them for a long time now. And I've checked out some of that stuff, but it's always been more of like a late night thing. A really cool, like heartwarming insight into his family and all that. And the Lou Barlow sets had that too. You know, occasionally his daughter was running around screaming as he was trying to play a song, that kind of thing. but there was just something about him that it was like, oh yeah, okay. And I don't know if it was at that time or shortly before that it kind of just hit me that like, oh wait, a lot of my favorite Dinosaur Jr. songs, especially the recent stuff, are songs that he sings. And, you know, hearing those songs played in that context and then just getting a lot more exposure to his own work. I think I bought one of his records on like a Bandcamp Friday last year and all that. Anyway, so this sort of like realization of like, oh, wait, I really like Lou Barlow, like specifically, not just as the bassist with the awesome hair and the awesome Gibson. What's that bass?
Is it a Ripper?
Yeah. The Gibson Ripper. Just like the look, the way he plays it, the way it sounds, the whole thing, you know. Like that's awesome, but there's even more to this guy. So that happened about a year ago for me, and then he put out a record that I think he recorded it all at home.
I believe so. I believe he may have sweetened some stuff up in the studio, but I believe it was all recorded at home. Yes,
right. So he put together a record that just came out, a week ago, and got to listen to it early this week, and some of the songs were definitely songs that I remember from those Instagram sets. And they're all just, they're really good, you know, for like one person with a guitar or occasionally a ukulele or, you know, maybe a little bit of other stuff. It's a lot of impressive song writing. I like his style of it. I like his voice to go along with it. And I like that there's like a string of songs that are less than 2 minutes long. I like a good 7 to 10 minute jam on in the right context, you know, whether it's from the Grateful Dead to Theosis, my very often mentioned band during our music picks. I like that a lot. But I also like a song that is short and sweet, and like the Minutemen did it a lot, and to do a short song not in a punk style, I think is still relatively unique. And it's just a cool thing. Not every song on this record is that short, but there are a bunch of them that are. And I don't know, it's just something that I wanted to call attention to. So yeah, the name of the album is Reason to Live. And it's got a cool album art cover that's just like a bunch of a mishmash collage should have practiced saying that one, of things from home, you know, that in his family and sort of the craziness of doing those sets. And yeah, it came out really well. So, Dinosaur Jr. As a band just put a record out very recently. And, you know, it's nice to get the 1-2 punch because I like this one a lot too.
Yeah. For those who are, inclined to, like digital releases, I know that both you and I tend to prefer physical releases sometimes, but, Lou Barlow did a thing called the Artist Enabler Club last year for Joyful Noise Records, where he released songs. You could do it digitally or, with physical media. I did the digital one because it was a little bit more affordable, but he released a bunch of new songs. He recorded some covers. He has a young daughter, so he recorded covers of like the Paw Patrol theme song and a couple other kids shows. He released some old demos of his. So every month you would get this either physical or digital care package from him. I think I recommended it on the show actually once, but this album is made up of his favorite songs from that year-long process, and he re-recorded them and souped them up, so they're really great. I heartily retweet this endorsement.
Nice.
Yeah. And also for all the, if you were a member of the physical club, which I was not, he handmade you an album cover for this album. So you got a vinyl with a cover that he actually painted or made a collage or whatever specifically for you, which is pretty cool too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I almost bumped up to the physical for that, but I decided to be a responsible father and husband and not do that. God damn these adult responsibilities. So anyway, let's talk about my pick, which is actually going to be two albums that I'm encouraging you to listen to together. This came up for me because I was talking with a friend of mine on Monday night about music, and he said he was, I don't want to say he was slandering the Rolling Stones, but he said, like, I don't think there's a Rolling Stones album I would ever sit to listen to, you know, front to back. And I said, well, the answer to that is you should listen to Exile on Main Street. Because there's, I would say there's like three or four Stones albums that are great front to back, but he was looking for one, and I said, start with Exile on Main Street. And I said, I know you like Liz Phair's Exile in Guyville, and that's a response to Exile on Main Street. It's a song-for-song response to that. And he said, I didn't know that. I said, yeah, Liz Phair, when she wrote Exile in Guyville, I don't know if she wrote the songs this way, but when she put together the album, they're each 18 songs, and she wanted each track on her record to thematically reflect, whether like lyrically or tonally or tempo-wise, the corresponding track on Exile on Mainville. Exile on Main Street. Jesus Christ. It's hard to say right. The album with the two very similar names back and forth. So I had created a Spotify playlist a couple years ago called Exile to Exile, and I couldn't find it. I must have deleted it accidentally, so I remade it this week. And I just alternated the tracks on Exile on Main Street and Exile in Guyville. And it's amazing how well the albums work together. I think that the knock on both of these records, if I had to give them one, was that there are points where they drag because they maybe feel a little bit samey, where there's a couple of songs that are similar back to back to back, and so you can sort of get lost in those moments. And so by intercutting the other artists' songs in between there, it doesn't do that. The albums don't drag in the same way. And again, I love both these albums, so it's not like I think that they are that the sameness in parts is detrimental to your enjoyment, but I think it adds a new level of enjoyment to hear them put together. So I'm actually going to link in the show notes today my playlist of these two albums together. And it's just an interesting experience to do. It is a 2-hour and 3-minute experience because it's two 18-song albums, you know, shuffled together. It's a lot of music, but I think it's a fun experiment to do. And if you find yourself like 5 or 6 songs in, only enjoying one or the other, I think listening to the albums individually is perfectly fine as well. But I've listened to this like I think 2 or 3 times so far this week, all the way through. I listened to it when I was in the office the other day. I listened to it when I was doing dishes the other day. I do like the juxtaposition of the two back to back. So, Exile on Main Street and Exile in Guyville, those are my picks for this week. So thank you all for listening. We truly appreciate it. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com for all your Mets needs. Find Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Get this show from Apple Podcasts, from Stitcher, from Spotify. Rate, review, and subscribe wherever you grab the show. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets. Thank you.